Good morning and welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. Justice Dofano is on my right, your left. Justice McCoy is on my left and your right, and I'm Justice Livingston. We have two cases set for the 9 o'clock docket. The first case is Menifee versus Oman. If the clerk will please announce the counsel.
May it please the court, Mr. William Livingston will argue for the appellant, and Mr. David Pratt will argue for the appellant.
Thank you. Mr. Whittington. Whitting, I'm sorry.
The trial court's decision to sustain the appellee's motion to dismiss should be overturned as an abuse of discretion. In reading the report in its totality, the appellant's expert, Dr. Tabler, is qualified to opine as to the standards of care, the breaches of those standards alleged, and the harms caused. The abuse of discretion standard, a trial court abuses its discretion if it renders an arbitrary or unreasonable decision or acts without reference to any guiding rules or principles. A trial court has no discretion in determining what the law is or applying the law to the facts. A clear failure by the trial court to analyze or apply the law correctly will constitute an abuse of discretion. Now, the expert report that's in question here today, it just has to satisfy a good faith effort test. It's not a summary judgment. A fair summary of the expert's opinion about the applicable standard of care, how the care failed that standard, and the causal relationship between the failure and the harm done. We do not have to marshal all of our evidence or try the case. Just include the expert's opinion on each of the elements as identified in the statute. We need to inform the defendant of the specific conduct called into question and provide a basis for the trial court to conclude that these claims have merit. We do not have to litigate this case. This is before discovery. These are before depositions are taken and other fact-finding procedures. We just simply need to give the defendant notice of the standard of care that he breached, and our expert's opinion as to why that's the case. We do not have to meet a summary judgment burden here today. And Dr. Tabler is qualified to opine as to the care provided. He was practicing medicine at the time such testimony is given, and he was practicing medicine at the time this claim arose. He has knowledge of the accepted standards of medical care to their diagnosis, care, or the treatment of the illness, injury, or condition involved in the claim. He's qualified on the basis of training or experience to offer an expert opinion regarding those accepted standards. He does not have to be a specialist of the same school or practice. Additionally, the courts have held that a medical witness who is not of the same school of practice may be qualified to testify if he has practical knowledge of what is usually done by other practitioners under circumstances similar to those confronted by the defendant. Now, Dr. Tabler is qualified to opine as to the treatment to the dangerous reaction of psychotic medicines, which is what we're talking about here today. I would ask you to turn to page 16 of the report, where Dr. Tabler goes on into detail about the plaintiff who suffered severe injuries to her brain as a consequence of overdosing of antipsychotic medicines.
Excuse me, you say page 16?
Yes, ma'am.
No.
It only goes to 14.
Are we looking at the blue one? I'm sorry.
Yes, I believe. Appendix 1?
Maybe it's page 6. What is it you're discussing?
I'm on page 16C. Appellant's expert, Dr. Tabler, is qualified to opine as to the treatment provided to Ebola Tut.
Oh, you're talking about the brief, not the report?
Yes, I'm talking about the brief.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I apologize.
My fault.
And the reason I think it's important is, as I stated earlier, in our report, he just simply has to have knowledge of the treatment of the illness, injury, or condition involved in the claim. And in this claim, the plaintiff was over-medicated. As she was presented into the hospital, she was convulsing, she was biting her tongue out, her wheelchair was shaking violently. And all of this was due to a dangerous reaction she had to the medicine. Now, the defendant would argue that because our expert is not a pediatrician, that should make some difference as to the standard of care as to this report. And we would disagree with that vehemently, because regardless of whether you are an adult or a child or an animal, if you experience a dangerous reaction to medication, then the same standard applies whether you're a pediatrician or a physician treating an adult. If there's dangerous reactions, you should be able to recognize the reactions to those medicine and treat them appropriately.
Can you point directly to somewhere, though, in the report or the CV of Dr. Tabler where he says that the standard of care is the same for a pediatrician in a consulting basis?
Well, we don't have to list specific standards of care if they apply to physicians across the board. If one standard of care applies to all the physicians, then that's the standard of care that we can use.
Where does he say any place that the standard of care applies to all physicians? And I'm not saying that he doesn't.
Right.
I'm asking you.
On page 4 of his report,
okay,
he explains his familiarity with the standard of care.
Okay.
And then he goes on to explain the standard of care at Millwood on page 6, and the breach of that standard of care and the causal relationship between that breach and the harm done to the plaintiff. And then as he applies that, and it's not like this is just a general expert report, he applies it very specifically to each and every defendant doctor that we've alleged has caused harm. And if you will turn to page 13, he references Dr. Oman's report specifically and talks about the things that should have been done differently and what Dr. Oman should have done as to the care and treatment of the plaintiff in this matter. Now, again, we do not have to litigate this case here today. We simply have to put the defendant doctor on notice as to the standard of care, how he breached it, and how that breach caused the harm. And we feel we've done that. Now, again, we're not asking for a verdict. We're just asking for the opportunity to keep the doctors involved in this case so that proper discovery channels can be conducted, depositions taken, and move on down the road and try to figure out who's done what. But according to the evidence that we have here in front of us, we feel we have enough to keep Dr. Oman in this litigation. Again, because when this report, when it's read in its entirety, it provides fair notice to the defendant of the claims against him. And our report clearly sets forth the harm caused. The defense, or the defendant, has also said that a lot of what Dr. Tabler says in his report is conclusionary. But specific case law says that simple statements of fact are not conclusionary. And the doctor says, after reading Dr. Oman's report and based on his years of experience, this is not a doctor who just sat idly by and counseled soccer moms and housewives and depressed husbands as to their life. This man has run
procedural status of arguing to the trial court this was a good faith effort and I need an extension of time to clean up any problems that the court feels is necessary.
When you say what's the procedural status, I mean we're here today arguing that the report was a good faith effort. We feel that the Court of Appeals should overturn the trial court. We feel they abused their discretion here today.
I know, but didn't the trial court dismiss it without finding that it was a good faith effort and affording you an opportunity to correct it?
I believe we were afforded an opportunity to correct it, but again, we feel the report on its face gives Dr. Oman plenty of notice as to the standard of care and the breach of that standard and the harm caused. We feel the report as it's written by Dr. Tabler is sufficient to pass the expert report as required by statute, and that we should be allowed to continue in this case.
I think what we're asking is, were you granted initially before the dismissal a 30-day extension to supplement Dr. Tabler's report, or did you ask for that in the trial court?
I'm not sure if we asked for that or not, Judge. I'm sorry.
I have a question. On page one of the expert report, Dr. Tabler lists the records and documents that he reviewed in preparing the report, but he doesn't list there any records from, I think it's North Hills Hospital. And I think that that's the hospital that this particular doctor, Dr. Oman, was a consulting physician at. Is that fatal to the report?
No, I don't think that's fatal on its face, because even if he made an omission here, we know, as stated in his report, that he did in fact review notes from North Hills Hospital, specifically the notes of Dr. Oman, as he is very specific in the dates and what was administered and what was done. He also puts in detail what Dr. Oman's position was as to the drugs that should be administered or not administered and the care that should be given. So even if he failed to admit that he did review those medical records, it's proof positive, as he talks about the doctors, that he did in fact review records from that hospital and from this doctor specifically. So, okay. So, what we're talking about here today is we're talking about the over-medication of a young woman, Ms. Tutt, at multiple hospitals that she went to that was sent there by her mother for psychiatric care. And as Dr. Tabler expressly says in his report, that he's been a board-certified psychiatrist for 20 years. And at the creation of this report, he continues to practice medicine in that capacity. He's the medical director at the Behavioral Medicine Unit of Kindred Hospital in Louisville, Kentucky. He's the medical director of the behavioral unit at Clark Memorial Hospital in Jefferson, Indiana. He was working as an attending physician at the Kentucky Correctional Psychiatric Center in LaGrange, Kentucky. He was serving as the medical director of an acute unit at the Brook Hospital in Louisville, Kentucky, and worked as a faculty member in the Department of Psychiatry for the University of Louisville, Kentucky. We believe that Dr. Tabler's experience working with the Pathways Brain Injury Unit at Christopher East Healthcare Center. He worked at the Traumatic Brain Injury Center at the Baptist East Hospital. And he wrote on the pharmacological treatment of brain injury to patients. I mean, again, this man is very well respected in his field as to the administering of drugs and to the effects that they have on the patients that are given to him. And we feel that in this specific case, with this specific doctors, with this specific facts, he is of the experience and knowledge to express an opinion as to why the defendant failed in the way they did and the resulting harm that came of the plaintiff. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Whitting. Mr. Pratt?
Aren't you start off by telling us about the good faith effort procedural posture?
Well, do, Your Honor. As I understand it, our objections to the sufficiency of this particular report and the motion to dismiss were filed subsequent to the motions filed by the other defendants in this case. I'm not off the top of my head aware if the plaintiff actually requested a 30-day extension to cure or not. The court's order does not even address that, so I would presume that it was not requested. Otherwise, I think it would probably be in the court's order, either granting or denying it. It was in the order for the other defendants, so presumably those other defendants had requested, or pardon me, the plaintiffs had requested an extension with regard to the other defendants. But I want to back up for just a moment to kind of where Mr. Whittington left off with regard to Dr. Tabler's list of experience and how he's very well regarded and respected in the industry, or more particularly with regard to the medications at issue here. We're not saying that he's not well respected. We're not saying that he's not qualified to talk about certain things. What we are saying is that in this qualification analysis, this court has previously recognized that there are two different qualification analyses that must occur, one for qualification to opine on standard of care, one for qualification to opine on causation. And frankly, Your Honors, I'm not going to stand here before you today and tell you that Dr. Tabler is not qualified to opine on causation. This man certainly has a vast experience dealing with these particular types of drugs. He probably knows very well what can occur. Although, as I'll talk about in a minute, I don't think that he specifically laid that out in this report. But first, with regard to his qualification regarding the standard of care, the starting point is Section 74-401, and the particular subsection that I have at issue is the third, which is that he's qualified to opine on the specific matter. And as the Broders Court stated out of the Supreme Court, the test for that is whether the expert has the knowledge, experience, and training regarding the specific issue before the court. Now, Mr. Whittington framed this specific issue as the drugs and the effects of the drugs, but really the specific issue is whether this pediatrician, in the limited role that he played, had a duty to undertake certain actions. Now, we're not claiming that Mr. Tabler needs to actually be a pediatrician. We're certainly not going that far. The court has said as much itself in the past, as has the Supreme Court. But what we are saying is that if this doctor is going to opine as to a pediatrician in a limited role that pediatrician played, that he needs to have some experience dealing with the child, adolescent, pediatric specific issues that a pediatrician would be looking at when called in to consult in such a case. This isn't a matter of the medication was given, Miss Tutt was transferred to a hospital and only one doctor saw her. This case involves 30 defendants. Dr. Oman is just one of those, and he's near the end of the chain as far as those doctors who did see her. So in that regard, and when we're dealing with so many different disciplines, from the folks at Millwood and their specific roles as psychiatrists and psychotherapists and those dealing with psychopharmacology, ranging all the way through emergency room personnel to Dr. Oman later in the chain of those who saw her, we need to see something, I believe, in the way that Dr. Tabler is capable and is familiar with what Dr. Oman would have been dealing with at that time.
And is there something different or unique that maybe the report should have included regarding the role of any consulting physician in the hospital setting, what their duty might be?
I think that if the report had stated with regard to qualification that Dr. Tabler had previously worked with pediatricians or worked with doctors who specifically focused on the child or adolescent medical issues that are presented in this type of situation, then we probably wouldn't be here today. At least I wouldn't be standing here arguing qualification with you today. But this particular report doesn't go that far. Mr. Whittington listed earlier all of Dr. Tabler's experience, and frankly, as I read this list, a great percentage of this list deals with behavioral health hospitals in specific, psychiatric centers, geriatric psychiatric units, the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Louisville. All of his educational experience, all of his medical experience in this regard has all been specific to psychiatry, behavioral health, things of that nature. And I would presume along the way that at some point he has in fact dealt with children in pediatric situations. But this report doesn't say that. And if we take that...
This is a 16-year-old, right?
Yeah, it's been a long time since I was 16, but I wouldn't see a pediatrician. Like that, those two things just don't correlate to me, a pediatrician and a 16-year-old.
And over-medicating is over-medicating. I mean, it's the medication is the problem. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, we just say that, well, this patient was 50 years old, and he usually works with people in their 20s and 30s. I mean, and he has to show that he works with people in their 50s. I mean, the problem is the over-medication.
I absolutely agree that the problem is the medication, Your Honor, and I'm not suggesting that no one is at fault in this role, but what I'm suggesting is that Dr. Oman was called in for a limited, specific pediatrician consultation, and I would point to page 14 of Dr. Tabler's report in this regard, in which Dr. Tabler quotes at length from the notes issued by Dr. Oman, and I apologize it's not numbered, but about two-thirds of the way down that long paragraph on page 14, it states, and this is directly from Dr. Oman's report, "I am not aware of any pediatric syndrome that would explain this situation." Now, he admittedly goes over, having reviewed her medical record, displays his knowledge that she had been administered certain medications at Millwood and that she had gone on to Arlington Hospital from there. But he was called in to evaluate her in his role as a pediatrician. And nowhere in this report does Dr. Tabler say that a pediatrician called in for this type of consultation has a duty to prescribe the types of anticonvulsants that Dr. Tabler suggests needed to occur. More importantly, he doesn't suggest that a pediatrician or that he knows why a pediatrician would be under that type of duty. As this court stated in Ehrlich and Collini cases, a medical expert who is not in the same school of medicine can opine, but only if he is familiar with what is usually and customarily done by a practitioner under similar circumstances confronting the defendant. And the circumstances confronting this defendant were a 16-year-old girl who had been over-medicated. But those circumstances also include a young girl in which that he was called in to evaluate in a pediatric role, and in that role only. So in that regard...
If this had been a surgeon who had removed the wrong lung, the doctor could have opined, "I know of no medical circumstance which would justify removing the wrong lung," and that doesn't mean he's not qualified to say you're not supposed to remove the wrong lung. I mean, I think it's just a matter of the way it's phrased.
Well, but Your Honor, it's also a matter of what Dr. Tabler is able to give opinions on. Certainly, removing the wrong lung would be almost a common sense, if not a medical common sense, or at a minimum a medical common sense analysis, that if the wrong lung is removed, the other one should have come out, and that's certainly a mistake. That's certainly medical negligence.
One medication?
But, Your Honor, the problem is there's nothing in this report that states that Dr. Oman would have been required under the standard of care for a pediatrician to recognize the effects of this particular type of drug and to administer the particular type of anticonvulsants that the plaintiff suggests should have occurred. This is a specialized field of pharmacology. We're not dealing with aspirin. We're not dealing with the run-of-the-mill medications that any emergency room physician or any pediatrician or any run-of-the-mill doctor, so to speak, would deal with. We're talking about Haldol and other psychotic medications that are of particular specialty within the medicine field. So I think that is what makes this case different and what requires this report to include something that states that a pediatrician would know to do different, and it doesn't. And even if it did, we don't know from this report that Dr. Tabler is capable or qualified to issue that type of opinion.
If we haven't done discovery, how do we know that he was brought in for a pediatric consult other than the fact that he's a physician or somebody says, would you come over here and take a look at this patient and tell me what you think, having nothing to do with he's a podiatrist or a pediatrician? We haven't done discovery.
No, we haven't, Your Honor.
How do we know, then, that he's brought in for a pediatric consult?
Dr. Tabler's report goes that far, Your Honor.
Dr. Tabler's report? Okay.
Yes.
Where is that?
Page 13, paragraph 8.
I'm looking at it.
Dr. Oman began treating the patient on March 2nd at North Hills Hospital at 9:51 a.m. in his capacity as a consulting pediatrician.
Well, he is a pediatrician, and he was asked to consult, but I don't know that answers the question with that discovery.
Well, and then we go on to see later on in the quoted portion of Dr. Oman's notes where he states specifically that he is not aware of any pediatric syndrome that would explain this situation. So in that regard, I think it's clear from his notes that he came in, he reviewed the records, he knew that Ms. Tutt was there for reactions to psychotic medications, but he was there evaluating her as a 16-year-old for the purposes of analyzing her pediatric situation. And I'd like to also turn for a moment, Your Honors, to the portions of Mr. Whittington's argument and in the brief that discusses certain cases regarding qualifications. And this court issued a number of cases just last year in this regard, but having reviewed all of those, I think the distinction between the Esther K., the Barber case, the Foster case, and the Peters case is that all of those dealt with purported experts that were familiar with or had experience with treating the types of patients that were at issue in those cases. And again, here we simply have no indication that Dr. Tabler has experience treating a pediatrician. I go back to my earlier statement that presumably he does in his years of experience, but it's not in this report. And if it's not in this report, it requires an inference to be drawn. And under the case law, inferences are simply not permissible. It has to be within the four corners of the report, and it's not. And I'd like to, in my last couple of minutes, touch briefly on the Palacio standard with regard to whether this report addresses the particular elements required. I touched briefly on the standard of care, and throughout this report, Dr. Tabler has essentially engaged in a copy and paste of the standard of care. All 10 defendants from North Hills Hospital have been given the exact same standard of care. It is a general and conclusory standard stating that the doctors owe the patient in an acute care setting the duty of immediate and sufficient medical response. that's a general statement of any duty. I think every doctor has a duty to give their patient immediate medical response. But this standard...
To her condition, to her specific condition, in order to prevent brain damage. I mean, you cut short the specifics of it.
No, absolutely, Your Honor. But
I agree that it's all the same all the way through, but I gather that his position was every one of these physicians that saw her after she was over-medicated should have realized that they needed to be given prophylactic anticonvulsants, and not one of them did. And the standard of care basically was the same. You've got this person, it's doing all these symptoms are present, you have this history, and you ought to know to give her these anticonvulsants now, and not one person did. I don't see anything the matter with that. If that's what he's saying, and that's kind of what I gather.
Well, and I think if that's what he's saying is the problem that I have, because, again, that requires this inference drawing to occur before we can determine if that really is what he's saying the standard of care is. Immediate medical attention to prevent brain damage. Well, we don't know what that really means. We don't know that.
In response to her condition. Well, now, this is fair notice standard. You know, we're not trying to case.
Absolutely.
It just has to be a good faith effort. Now, I'm sort of at a loss as to hear what happened to the good faith 30 days to correct it. But, okay, I understand your position.
And finally, Your Honors, I think I'm almost out of time, but I want to touch real quickly on...
You are out of time.
I didn't see the red light pop, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
Just finish your sentence,
please. You're so far out of time, the red light's gone off.
I saw my yellow, but I never saw the red. Just briefly on causation, the one thing I want to point out is this report doesn't say how Dr. Oman's conduct made this condition worse. He doesn't say that if Dr. Oman had given these medications when requested, then she would have been better. And as far down the chain as he was, I just don't think that this report is sufficient. Thank you.
Thank you for the additional time.
Thank you, Mr. Pratt. Mr. Whittington.
I would like for you guys to turn to page 24 of the report, where it does quote Dr. Oman specifically. I'm sorry, but page 24 of the brief, where it quotes Dr. Oman. Mr. Pratt here brought up a sentence, and it was so important that he said it twice. I am not aware of any pediatric syndrome that would explain this situation. To me, the most compelling thing of this entire report is his very next sentence, where he says, I guess that she's reacting to her medications that were given to her and that she will probably continue to be in this state until her medications wear off. He then proceeds to strap her into a bed. This is a woman covered in vomit, biting her tongue out, and convulsing so hard her wheelchair is shaking. And he hits the nail right on the head. Even as a pediatrician, he does. I guess it's her medications. Let's strap her to a bed and let them wear off.
Well, then that's why your expert should have opined that even a pediatrician should have been aware of what was causing this and done something about it.
I believe any physician.
Okay, then if he had said that. Okay.
He goes on down. As Dr. Oman's own notes, this is in the brief, where he alleges that... It's this failure to act that caused, you know, perhaps, as I stand here today, we don't know what Dr. Oman could have done, because we don't know how many seizures she had had. We don't know how far along the brain damage was. But we'll never know, because Dr. Oman, recognizing her condition, failed to do anything about it except strap her to a bed and wait for the medications to wear off. And Dr. Tabler says it's this failure to act. It's this failure to act to prevent further seizures where he's breached his standard of care. And I understand that Dr. Oman was put in a just precarious position, right? The defense wants to make it known that there were 30 doctors that saw this plaintiff. And I submit to you that if you took a person and put them in the room and you gave 30 people 30 rocks, is the 30th person less liable to that person than the first if they all throw rocks at the one sitting on the ground? It's just a chain of negligence that starts at 1 and ends at 30. And I submit to you that Dr. Tabler as he opined in his report, has said that Dr. Oman is just as negligent in his care and his omissions as the first doctor that started the over-medication. And it's, again, we don't have to try the case here today. Dr. Oman needs to be in this. He needs his day in court. And we feel he should have it. I know the plaintiff deserves it. And all we're saying is give us a chance to do some discovery, keep the doctors in, do some depositions, and figure out what happened. Medical liability is the only type of cases where you almost have to prove your case before you can even file a petition with the court.
How many physicians have been dismissed out of the 30?
That I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know how many physicians, if any. I don't think any have been dismissed so far, but I don't know. Has it been one?
Well, I don't know. One here.
Oh, well, he hasn't been dismissed yet, right? Because that's why we're here at appeals.
He's been dismissed. Now, you're appealing that.
Yes, we're okay. We are appealing that decision.
You've got 29 doctors left to do discovery for to find out what happened.
So. That's true.
Okay.
Having said that, though, what could Dr. Oman have done, right? If he gives her the right medicines, and instead of strapping her to a bed, if he gives her the right medicines, maybe she's a different person today. I think we deserve the opportunity to find that out. We're not asking for a judgment. We're just asking for the chance. Thank you.
Gentlemen, your case is submitted. We appreciate your arguments and your briefing today. You are excused. We will proceed to case number 2.